Blog Talk Radio.
That's the Wilhelm scream. That's the Wilhelm scream. You hear it all. It's, you hear that shit almost every movie. It was, especially when a dude's falling, almost all the time. It's some
you
random
mean,
sound
the
that
white
they created.
In the woods?
What else?
You mean that's the sound that I hear whenever, every time a white woman trips in the woods for no reason in a horror movie?
That's a good one. Well, yo, this is Mario Ultra Evil, and I might change that name because whenever I get into a debate, that's one of the first things I get targeted on is my name because I must really be evil, you know. And
they don't know you're okay there.
Yeah, I mean, they actually take it seriously. Oh, evil, ultra evil. I guess you must really be evil then. I mean, how can you proudly call yourself evil and stuff? Like, what evil villain announces himself as being ultra evil? It's just a gag, asshole.
Every single villain in the James Bond movies does.
Apparently so. Oh man, we got a pretty good cool. Oh, you didn't introduce yourself, man.
I didn't do what?
You didn't introduce yourself.
Oh, look at me! I already think they know me. Hi everyone, it's Em. So glad you could join us for today's show. And for all the lurkers that usually listen but don't call tonight. We want to hear what you think of the shows that we're discussing, and we want to hear what your favorite shows are, too. We're going to be discussing some current ones. We're going to be discussing some really, really old ones. And just let us know what you think of what's currently on TV. We'd like a fresh, non-religiously laced perspective. Thank you.
Dig it. Well, you know, this is a nice, cool, lighthearted, easygoing show. And because we like to do a little variety of stuff, and I am a bit of a geek and stuff, so, yeah, I'm a flaunt that proudly. I don't care who. I just revoked my black card. I don't give a shit. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, there's so many. I really hope I get to all the things that I want to talk about because anyone who knows me knows that I love three things with a huge passion: books, music, and television or movies. So I could go on about this all day long. Let's get right into it. Mario, you want to go first?
Okay. All right, dig it. I guess my first show, and, you know, I really got into this show. I thought it was quite it was quite original to me. You know, it just, you know, the way that it held things together, and we kind of talked about it before a little bit, but, you know, this time we're going to talk a little bit more about the religious aspect and everything like that, and that's Battlestar Galactica. Now, if we didn't really, you know, if you didn't know, Battlestar Galactica became a sci-fi phenomenon starring a great and awesome Edward James Olmos and a few other people.
For those
but,
who don't know,
you know,
that's Selena's dad. I'm
right,
just kidding you guys.
Right,
he
right.
played Selena's dad in the movie Selena.
Right. Then American Me, and he's also, I think he was the head or something like that of Detective, I mean, Miami Vice or something like that.
I don't remember. I really
you
don't.
You know Miami Vice, man. That shit was the, you know.
No,
it,
I'm not about
made,
that life. You know what
man,
it is? I don't think anyone who actually lived in Miami was into Miami Vice. Sorry.
Oh, that's fucked up. Anyway, so, the show went on. It went on for 4 seasons. There are several offshoot movies, but the central idea, because you got, it seems like their whole planetary system is based on, I think it's the Zodiac or something like that, and then you also had this underlying prophecy and mythos about an arrow pointing to a planet. And the planet is actually Earth, but they know it by a different name because they're not actually on Earth. And then somebody referred to as Mormons in space, which I find kind of hilarious. But you got people seeing prophecies. You got things going on that resemble a lot of paganism, if you ask me. But the discussion, you know, about it, I mean, because, you know, you got people zoning out and they're thinking, you know, that all these things have some type of greater importance and that they're being commanded, they're being guided. You know, the same things that we hear all the time in modern day, you know, is that, you know, we're being commanded to do something. I mean, they drew a parallel, but 12 parallel between the 12 colonies, which were named after the Zodiac, and the 12 tribes of Israel, in search of a promised land. They're in search of a promised plant.
Yeah.
You know?
And, I mean, let's not forget Dr. Gaius Baltar. He's one of my favorite characters on the show.
Yeah.
We see him in the very first episode. He comes off as this epic douchebag. Excuse my language.
Oh, yeah.
He's kind of stuck on himself, bit of a womanizer. And brilliant, truly brilliant, and revels in the fact. And he is unknowingly in a relationship with the enemy, a Cylon. He doesn't know it, though. And, you know, they tell him he's a prophet. And it turns out he really is a prophet. And, you know, and later on in the show, you see him evolve in a huge way as a person. He really takes that title and that role seriously and actually starts to care about people other than himself. And then you see the president, who started off as a good character, but as the show progressed, you hated her more and more because she'd do these evil things in the name of the greater good. And how many religious people have we seen do exactly that?
Right, exactly. I mean, they even a lot of things they say are referenced, you know, to something like Indian or even sometimes Hebrew or Judaism and stuff. This stuff that you probably wouldn't recognize unless you were really, really, really into all that. It became so much more than just a sci-fi show. That's one reason why it's so intriguing. I mean, even you have the Cylons. There's supposed to be 7 Cylon models. Was it 7? It was 7.
Yeah, there were 7, but there were various copies of each of the models, and then there were sleeper
right.
agents who didn't know that they were Cylon.
Right, and so you also have the idea of reincarnation and rebirth because Cylons, they die, they come back from a central database or whatever, and I mean, it was compelling in the way that it just, you know, like even the characters, Anastasia Duala, right? She shares her first name with an early Christian martyr, Saint Anastasia.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right. Laura Roslin's last name is a village in Scotland, where there's a chapel in a secret location of the Holy Grail.
Mm-hmm.
It's reputed to be the secret location of the Holy Grail. Sharon Valeri, an incarnation of Cylon model number 8, shares her last name with the ancient Roman family, the Valeri, plural Valerius, many of whose members are buried on the St. Peter's Basilica. Her nickname is Boomer, is a character of Moby Dick. I don't know that is anything.
Well,
just
look at Gaius, Dr. Gaius Baltar. Gaius is the name of Julius Caesar.
Right, right. And it goes, dude's nickname is Apollo.
Uh-huh.
Not his, but the other guy. Yeah.
Yep. You have so many different things going on. In Battlestar Galactica, so many references to historical figures, religious figures. The show was very, very well done, and it kind of came as a shock that a show that sci-fi produced could be that involved, and it kind of set the bar for them really high, where it's like, okay, we can watch good shows on the sci-fi network. It's not just cheesy Saturday night flicks and old soap operas like, you know, Dark Shadows and stuff. So definitely,
right.
that one is definitely one to put on the list. Let's see. What is my first? Because I have a few on my list, actually. I think the first on my list would have to be Spartacus. That show ended a few months ago after 3 seasons. The first season was actually my favorite because we had the original Spartacus. Andy Whitfield, the actor who played him, died of Hodgkin's lymphoma, and he was replaced by the 3rd season. But the reason I love the show and why it's so hard to find anyone to discuss it with who isn't a freethinker or an atheist is because of the loads of sex and violence on the show.
Glorious sex and violence on the show. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, seriously, the show wasn't all that it was. Like, it wasn't all sex and violence, but I love that they didn't filter that out. These were very real aspects of the Roman Empire and enslavement under the Roman Empire. And, you know, Spartacus was about the slave rebellion, the huge slave rebellion from Roman slave owners around the time that the slave Spartacus was popular. You know, he was...
The third Servile Wars, if I remember correctly.
Third Servile Wars. And, you know, it's great because, first of all, it shows that slavery existed long before the transatlantic slave trade. And it also shows different methods of slavery. Christians love to quote the Bible. You know, every time an atheist says, hey, God condones slavery, they're like, well, it was different back then. And we see that it was very different. There are different forms of slavery. It wasn't just picking cotton in the fields all day or planting indigo in the fields all day. It was also, you know, being in your master's house, having to sleep with all his guests, having to fight to the death to earn your keep. These were different, but they sure as hell weren't better.
Right.
And, you know, we saw how very limiting it was to be in that position of a slave, and how even the servant with the most power and influence still was lower than the lowest free man. If, you know, their master decides, you know, to get into one of their moods or change their mind. You really only have your power only lasts as long as your master is alive and is in a good mood, is in a mood to give you that power.
Right. And go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
You know, they were really, really big on these. The central... his wife is deeply spiritual and really believes in the gods commanding their path. And Spartacus loses he was never really, really a big believer, but then he completely loses all that belief after a certain event, which I won't spoil, which leads to, pushes him to be more the character he becomes for a while. He begins to get complacent, and he begins to settle into life as this gladiator, doing the beck and call of a master, you know, with some semblance of some honor that his brother gladiators give him, until another event tells him that's not what it really is. I'm still a slave no matter what. And he never really fully believes in the gods, but he accepts the wisdom that his wife, who he kind of keeps having thoughts of and everything, he accepts her vision of the gods, and that's one of the things that kind of keeps him on his path, or starts him on the path of being the captain that we finally hear about in history.
Yeah, I love that. And we see too. The show is really, really great for showing how much or how little power a woman can have, depending on her relationship with her husband, her relationship with her father, and how much money she has. We saw a lot of female characters in Spartacus who were really running things behind the scenes, and a lot that had only, you know, faint, brief illusions of power. And to the point where even a male slave sometimes would be able to have power over them. We saw a lot of, a lot of betrayal among the slaves. There were a lot of power struggles,
right.
Most notably, and the most, like, hated character of all time probably on that show, Asher. He caused a lot of people's downfall and ruin with his lust for power.
Slimy bastard right there, boy.
Exactly. And then there was Lucretia. You know, she was a grimy one, too. She was a bit of a social climber. And you know, with the death of her husband, saw her plummeting to, you know, be a victim at the hands of others. What was great about the show, though, was that it really showed how even some of the people that had the worst lives were so complacent in the drudgery and despair of their lives that they missed real opportunities to make a difference and make their lives better. And as I was saying before, even the servants that seemed to have the most power could have it taken away in an instant. In the final season, we had one slave whose master was completely in love with her master, who felt that he was completely in love with her. Mind you, people have the ability to set their servants free then, and he never set her free, so I don't know what she was thinking. But, you know, she's raised by the son and runs away, and, you know, he's like, you know, I really do love her. Unfortunately, all of my generals know that she ran away, and then she sided with the slaves, so I have to kill her anyway. So it's like, in the end, no matter what he said, no matter how much power she had in his household, she's still a slave.
Right. You know, they continually allude to some form of the gods, especially in season one, when you see the gods more prominently. Like, they actually have, I mean, they've gone through an epic drought. So they organize a game, a special contest between a legendary gladiator and two of the lead gladiators. Spartacus was not a lead gladiator at the time, so it's purely in jest to compare him with the actual champion of Capia, which was Crixus. And they actually organized a game, hoping that would appease the gods and it would rain. Yeah, because, you know, plot convenience.
No, it wasn't Crixus. It was the beast, the one whose betrayal by Asher ended up getting him killed.
No. Episode 5.
How do you remember which episode it was? Oh my God, you're such a nerd.
Exactly. Episode 5, they had to fight Theocles, a gigantic, scarred up albino.
Right. Okay, I remember that one.
Yeah.
That was the one Crixus got so injured.
Yeah.
And the only person who had ever fought Theocles before and lived was Doctore.
Yep, on Emmaus. Badass.
Okay, yeah, we did see the gods. Well, we didn't see them, but we saw, like, the superstition at work more in season one. seasons 2 and 3 I really loved, because season 2 gave us a really great background on the other gladiators, especially Gannicus, my boo. And season 3 kind of was, you know, people were like, yeah, I'm tired of waiting for the gods. Let's do this. Let's make this happen.
Right. And they almost always said, if the gods wills it, if it's the gods will it or something like that, body goddess didn't care, because he'd stand up there and say, you know, like, the gods finally ram cocking ass or something like that. So if you watch the show for any other reason, watch it to get quotes from body goddess, because that dude can turn a phrase. Okay.
Yes.
You counsel to suck the cock that pisses on me. That is epic.
I love it. Everything he says is like, I just wish that I could say this to one person one time and have them understand they're being insulted. Just one time.
Right. We got a call online and see what's happening. 360 degrees. What's up?
This is the big funny Travis Simmons with the with hey, how y'all doing? On the line with me is
Rachel from the Pink Atheist.
Hi, Rachel.
Oh, what's up?
Yeah, we're listening to you. Yeah, you're talking about Spartacus?
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah, I watched it. We're here. You can hear me, right?
Yes, yeah, so we can
hear
you.
Yeah, I hear.
Okay, I watched it. So I just wanted to join in talking about some Spartacus. I'm a TV addict.
Oh, okay, cool.
I know. Yeah. I know from your post in I think it was the Heathen Movie Club.
Yeah.
The which one?
The Heathen Movie Club.
The Heathen Movie Club.
Are you in that group?
I don't know. I need to be the Heathen Movie Club.
Yeah, it's the Heathen Movie and TV Club. How has Daron not invited him to this group yet? It's epic.
Okay, all right. Are there a lot of spoilers in this group, or is it?
Yeah, but there's a rule, like, we have to announce the spoilers. It's all good. You're good.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, because sometimes
and
I don't see shows.
I'm such an addict. I don't care about the spoilers. I will read the spoilers and still watch it.
See, I can't do that. I've seen so many movies and TV shows that I need that surprise, you know what I mean? So if I'm really going to watch something and get into it. But there'll be something like, I didn't see The Wire until last summer.
What
are
you going
to
do with your life?
I know. What happened was, I just wasn't a place where I could see them all from the beginning, and I'm not going to jump in into the middle on something.
Speaking of The Wire, would you like to talk about that? Because that wasn't on my list, but I really love that show. Can we talk about The Wire?
All right, go ahead.
The Wire was great.
It
was one of the few shows ever that had, over the course of the 5 years, I don't know, 30 different black characters that were all different and not cookie cutter in any kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
How about that?
Yeah, that was a shock to me, too. We did have a couple of stereotypes, but, I mean, there's stereotypes for a reason. These people do exist, but for the most part, there's a lot of individuality and diversity among poor blacks. You know, it wasn't everybody in the project is the exact same person. Everybody that deals drugs is the exact same person. And The Wire was great, too, because we saw there was a lot of surprises. There were some people I'm like, oh, that's a cool person. Next thing you know, they end up, like, snitching on somebody, getting somebody killed or something like that. Honestly, I threatened to stop. Like, I told myself I'm not going to watch this anymore when Wallace got killed.
But that was real.
I couldn't stop watching, I lied.
It's about I binge watched it. I watched it in like 3 weeks.
Yeah, I think The Wire
yeah.
was like one of those shows like you can't ever bring it back. I think honestly, I'm gonna say this with like so much certainty. I think The Wire was the last great black drama.
I enjoyed it because I haven't watched all the seasons yet. But I enjoy the fact that it's kind of like Game of Thrones, in which, you know, there's no resolution to the story. There's so many things going on, and you don't have the wraparound story in which we have a beginning, we have a drama in the middle, and then we also have a wrap-up ending. And it's I like the fact that there is no definitive endings to these whole things. Because, really,
yeah, exactly.
If you're going to do – if you're going to do something realistically, there isn't going to be the hero defeating the villain in one fell swoop all the time, you know.
Yeah, definitely not.
No, you know, why isn't there a movie about atheists and secular people getting together to figure out how to deal with the heavy thumb of religion's bigotry? That could be a good drama, couldn't it?
No one would go see that. I mean, the atheists would go see that, but the religious people, you know what? They might go see it because, you know, Kirk Cameron had that movie that was out, like, last year, and I was at the theater, and the theater where it was supposed to be in was, like, closed because absolutely no one bought a ticket. So clearly Americans are not as Christian as they keep saying they are. Maybe they would actually watch this movie.
Yeah, it would depend. Maybe it had to be like a drama, though, like where it was a series. You have to be able to get them into it. But the problem is their preachers get out in front of things and tell people not to watch it. So if you go back to TV shows, preachers told religious folks not to watch The Preachers of L.A., when I think it's the best show from my perspective for somebody to watch. Okay.
I don't even watch reality television, but I had to watch this one. I was like, dude, they're exposing their shit. I have to watch this. And it is just as good as I thought it was. And I'm watching this. I'm like, how do believers watch this?
Yeah, rock star preachers and whatnot. Yeah, that's
pretty much
just
like, well, God said that, you know, a man should prosper, blah, 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 blah. And this one dude talk, you know, bragging about how, you know, he has, like, 5 cars. A lot of them need bodyguards and security guards because they're so rich. Yeah, I'm saying they need bodyguards, security guards.
In the very opening, the guy had – I remember I did a bit of – I got a show to do tonight. I might have to bring this back. The guy, he says, y'all see my Bentley. You see my glory, but you don't know my story. And I'm like, is he a rapper or a preacher?
he's talking about himself as a pastor because he actually was a gang member and he was a meth addict for years and years and years. Now he's on that new hustle. He got clean, and now he's exploiting other people's addiction to God. Yay!
Ooh, that's good.
I mean, that's what's going on. Let's not try to twist it and turn it. He's got a sister who's still addicted, who he kind of hides from his congregation when he couldn't hide it anymore. He used her as an example of how hard his life is.
Threw her under the bus.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, but he admitted on that episode that he was the one that got her into it or something like that, right?
Yes, because he was.
Okay, so that one, I had to give him credit for that one.
He was dealing with stuff.
Which channel is it?
You know, he took a hit.
With my work schedule, I can't really watch a lot of TV. It was me. With my work schedule,
this is honestly the only reality show that has any bit of reality to it because this is exactly the kind of life all these mega church pastors are living. I think every person who belongs to a mega church or even a minor church should be watching. I remember my old neighborhood, we had about 8 churches within a 2-mile radius. We had a Brazilian Baptist church. We had an Episcopal church. We had a Catholic church. We had an Armenian Baptist church. We had a Korean Baptist church. And the neighborhood went from fair to freaking horrible. But you always knew who the pastor was just from standing in the parking lot. You could tell which car was his.
You could tell when he's walking around with a cashmere coat.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
You
know,
what channel is this show on? What channel is this
I'm looking for it right now in the DVR. I'll tell you in a second. I'm looking for it in the DVR for you.
Yeah, you can't walk around with a coat in Florida. That's just tacky and sweaty.
It's on the Oxygen Network. It's on Wednesdays, but it's I think it already had a season finale, but I think there may be, but
you
can get it online where you probably watch the episodes, and you can probably get it in your on demand.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Preachers of L.A. I'm serious. So
honestly,
we think about
this show.
What do you think about the Pope? What do you think about the Pope and how the Pope came out against the prosperity sermon? Which the
you
show
know, that
is based
whole thing, on. That whole thing is a bunch of malarkey. You know, now that I'm, since you brought it up and I'm on air right now, I'm going to tell everybody who's listening what I think about this. I'm speaking as a former Catholic right now. The whole thing is a con, and anybody who's buying it is being willfully swindled. The Catholic Church is the oldest, most organized mafia on earth. They're the oldest, most organized fraternity on earth. They did not get this far by not knowing how to do public relations. Pope Benedict was Pope. Everyone hated him, so he, quote-unquote, retired. He still has the title of Pope, by the way. You can look that up. He's Pope Emeritus. And they got this new guy that everybody likes. He's I think, but what has Pope Francis done? Has he allowed women to join the priesthood? Has he allowed priests to get married? Has he helped done anything to help gays in the church? And understand, the Vatican has enough money to get at least 15 nations completely out of debt. They invented the prosperity gospel. The ring on his finger alone could feed all everyone who's starving in Haiti. So he's mad that they're giving money to other people and Catholics aren't getting the money. Trust me, he's not against giving money to the church.
So you're saying that the Catholic Church is the biggest mega church and the prosperity sermon is what they've been doing for centuries, because if they the purgatory game was a prosperity sermon game, and if you want to bring back the TV, what's the name of that show?
He hasn't even come out against the priests who are molesting children, and this is something all of them have done. Even the other ones who were like Pope John Paul II, have done their best to cover up for these guys. They will protect each other first. They are out for the Vatican's interests first. And if you think that he actually cares about anyone else, well, the proof is in the pudding. What has he done? He's given a few great speeches in public. What has he actually changed? And he's in
the you're right.
He should change it.
Yeah, but he's ruffling feathers, okay? He's seeing, maybe he's tippy-toeing, seeing how far he can go before they kill him.
No, they're not going to kill him because he's the mouthpiece. He's doing exactly what they told him to. Those are the words they put in his mouth. He looks friendly. He says all the right things. And people think that the Catholic Church is welcoming and Catholicism is progressive. That's exactly what his job is to do, is to distract you from what's really going on.
So you think they're going to start acting like the Mormon Church and how the Mormon Church said that black folks are okay now, and they're going to start saying gay people are all right now and just trying to get back in the game because they're losing ground?
Well, as far as the Mormon Church is concerned, they have actually acted on what they said, at least as far as black people are concerned, where they have allowed black men to get into a position, to like higher positions in the Mormon Church. But Mormonism is really a sort of thing where, like, again, it doesn't have the hierarchy that the Catholic Church does. With the Catholic Church, everything comes down and everything goes up. So if you're talking about, you know, this Pope is saying all this great stuff, he's saying atheists are okay, gays are okay, blah, 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 he's in a position to change it. There are not many branches. Every part of the Roman Catholic Church is under that one umbrella of the Pope. But yeah, we're way off topic. Let's get back to the TV show. No, it's fine.
But there was a TV show that showed the Pope stuff, and that was on like Showtime or something. What was it called? It had Jeremy Irons as the Pope.
I remember
that.
Borgias. I just remember what it was called.
Yeah, the Borgias. Yeah, that
the
was
Borgias.
Good though. The Borgias, it was good, though, because it had as much sex as Spartacus did, almost, at the beginning.
Yeah.
And they both, as it went on, you know, they had the sex at the beginning of the first couple of two seasons of both of those shows, Spartacus and the Borgias, right? And then once they got you hooked, and same thing even with, like, True Blood, right? Even when they got you hooked, expecting some, you know, some titties every now and then, and they got you hooked on it, and then they took it away. And it became something else.
How could they
do that? Trick me.
I'm not gonna lie, I watched the first couple episodes specifically for Jeremy Irons because I'm such a fangirl for him. He's my older dude crush. Shout out to Jeremy Irons. Oh, that man. Anyways, yeah, I couldn't
get
on the show.
That show,
this show sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It was I love how they showed the cutthroat
and the cutthroat nature and intrigue of the ancient church and stuff like that, and with Cesare Borgia, didn't he fashion a portrait of Jesus that kind of looks like him and shit? You know. And
oh wow.
Yeah, I think that's. I'm fascinated by ancient religion as for one thing. And so when I see all this pomp and circumstance, all this pageantry, people having to kneel to kiss this dude's hem, the hem of his robes, and all this
uh-huh.
stuff right here, and they just, you know, then you get to the point where, well, we got to burn those people because they don't worship Jesus like us. The Tudors kind of went into that whole thing as well. Since
the Tudors
kind
was a great show.
It was good?
Right.
Great
oh, yeah.
show.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Now I got something to watch.
Know,
thank you. Shit.
Right. It's on Netflix, as a matter of fact. And they really go into all that stuff about, you know, how, you know, first of all, you know, because of the male dominance whole thing, you know, King Henry can bone as many women as he wants to. What the hell was her name? The chick that ended up getting her head cut off?
Amberlynn.
Yeah. Yeah, she the mere thought of her sleeping with the king who's married makes her a whore, and everybody thinks she's a whore, and nobody likes her and stuff like that. Well, you know, in all that, you know, you also got the king believing that he is set by God. God can put him on his throne. He is on this throne by God's will and command. Therefore, you should follow him because it's a God. It is, to go against the king is to also go against God.
Yeah, well, the Bible
and,
says that in Judges that all kings are appointed by God.
Right.
Mm.
So,
that,
you know.
Well,
it actually reinforces his ego.
Well, you
right.
know, Robert Greene Ingersoll said, the king ruled by force, the priest ruled by fear, and both by both. Two vultures born of the same egg. Robert Greene Ingersoll.
Pretty much. I mean, the Tudors was great, too, because it showed you what was going on with the Pope at the time when Henry was trying to break away and create the Church of England because he didn't want to be subordinate to the Pope anymore. He's like, you know, I'm a king. I shouldn't be anyone's subordinate. I shouldn't be having to follow anyone's orders. And the Pope was pretty much just trying to order all the kings and queens around. He was responsible for a lot of the marriages and a lot of the rivalries going on in various kingdoms in England, and Henry was sick of it. He's like, I don't want to be anyone's subordinate. I'm not a child. I am the king of England, and I'll do what I want. And it showed you how, you know, the Pope had a visceral reaction to the idea that he could not control anymore.
Right,
you know,
right.
That was a huge pawn on his chessboard, and it was walking right off. And he had real
right.
issues with that.
Right. As a matter of fact, it was such an important thing that Henry had to be careful because his wife was connected to the Pope somehow, and I think it was his cousin, her cousin.
His wife, Catherine of Aragon, was a very devout Catholic.
Right,
and
right,
he was
right.
afraid of her loyalties to the Pope.
Right, right. And this was, I mean, this was this before or after the Popes actually had armies?
No, this was, like, right around the time the Crusade started, so it was, like, right
okay.
during the formation of it all. But the thing about it is, and Henry eventually realized that as well and, you know, calmed down a bit, is that his wife always put her loyalty to him right before her loyalty to God, you know, more so than her loyalty to the Pope. So he had nothing to fear from her. But, you know, when you're going against someone of such power, of course you're always going to be paranoid about how they're going to retaliate.
Right.
Yeah,
it was
the show was pretty intense. I'm not going to lie. I love the show.
It's very intense, man. Very intense, especially the last couple seasons when they get into the burning people alive for being heretics because they, you know, you say Jesus had blue eyes. Okay, cool. Jesus had brown eyes. Burn that bitch. You know,
really?
A heretic. Yeah.
Everyone
you know,
that sounds good.
English.
I got to watch this. What channel is that on?
But everyone knows that Jesus was English, you guys.
Yeah.
Yes, he
yeah.
was. And
when you,
but Matthew we, and Peter.
Yeah.
But when
and
you, speaking when you
of
watch
TV
Travis,
shows, the
TV. Hmm? Huh? Oh, I'm sorry. When you watch
oh,
Travis.
Speak,
is not historically accurate to the letter. Like, for one thing, Henry never gets fat, you know, so don't watch it.
He did get heavy, and if you watch from the first season to the last season, you could see that not only did Jonathan Rhys-Meyers, the actor who played Henry, put on a little bit of weight, like you see it in his face, but they kept layering him with more clothing to make his body look heavier too. Like, he never had that protruding gut that Henry had.
I don't see it on the Showtime list.
Check HBO. Okay. It's not on anymore. The show ended a long time ago. But speaking of TV shows, the same actor who played Henry is actually on my new favorite show, Dracula. It's so good. It's so good, you guys.
Oh, yeah. I haven't been able to watch that.
What channel
is it? Oh, it's good. It's so, so good. You have Dracula pretending to be an American businessman. He drops his accent, which is an English accent. The Count developed an English accent over the hundreds of years, but he drops it, puts on an American accent, pretends to be an American businessman, and he's trying to bring electricity that's not dependent on heat, light that's not dependent upon electricity that's not dependent upon coal and petroleum to the people.
Can I ask a question?
He makes some enemies.
Is he like Dexter, where he sneaks out at night to get his blood? And can he walk around during the day? He's a business.
I mean,
so how
pretty
do get...
much, but, I mean, he's a vampire. That's what he's going to do. His issue on the show that his character faces, however, is the fact that he's made some enemies with other businessmen who his inventions will put out of business. And he's trying to hide the fact that he can't go out. Like, he's trying to find a cure for the fact that he's not able to go out during the day. And he's actually working with Dr. Van Helsing, who is trying to develop a cure for him. So Van Helsing is on the show, yes.
I mean, I've been slipping. I haven't actually caught on to this show.
Dude, you need to get – oh, my. I don't know how you're living, but you need to get
what
on the show.
What channel is
it? Dracula. There's actually one episode where Van Helsing makes a serum, and it works temporarily because of what the council did, because we do have vampire hunters in a council, and they're suspicious of the fact that all his soirees are at night and no one has ever seen him in the daytime. They invite him to a board meeting in the middle of the afternoon, knowing that he can't refuse because if he doesn't come, he'll lose his position on the board. So Van Helsing gives him a serum, and it allows him to be in the sun for a little bit, a while. But, like, you're kind of, like, gripping the edge of your seat because you don't know when it's going to wear out. You don't know if he's going to burst into flames in front of these people. It's awesome.
Right. I got to check this out, man. I seriously got to watch this. I mean, I've been slipping.
Okay. Yeah, you need to get on
the Tudors.
Great, great show.
It's on the History Channel.
But what I love about the show.
Is it on the History Channel?
What?
It's on BBC America? The Tudors?
The Tudors?
No.
It was originally
no.
on BBC America, but I think BBC America is playing the reruns.
They're playing it
in syndicate.
I saw it on HBO.
I saw it on HBO, too.
It's on Netflix right now, though. And
I'll
Borgias,
catch you on Netflix.
The Borgias, if you try to watch the Borgias, there are two types of Borgias. There's one with Jeremy Irons, and there's another one with some other dude who's American and is supposed to you know how it is when we get American actors to play British guys. They say, fuck it. I'm going to sound like I'm from Wisconsin no matter what. You know, it's kind of like it has an older white guy, you know, saying with a gruff voice and stuff. But he's not European at all, from what I can tell.
Well, you know, you have to worry about that. That ain't gonna happen anymore because since 60% of the movie's money is made overseas, you're going to have British accent dudes trying to pretend to be American because they need to have that actor in there in order to be able to make money in that market.
You know what always weirded me out about these shows, like Spartacus and Rome, which is another one I'm going to talk about later, is where this is supposed to be in ancient Rome, but everybody has a British accent.
Yeah, you know,
they don't even bother
actually,
anymore. Like, okay, the whole cast is British.
Yeah.
Let's not even bother.
Yeah, they they don't realize, you know, like Romans were actually more multicultural, multi-ethnic, whatever. I can't remember because I was reading about that myself because it was something I was actually puzzled about. Like, you know, I didn't really wouldn't think there'd be so many white dudes in Rome, you know, which always kind of tripped me out. But
yeah, we
you know,
also
I,
see cultural and ethnic diversity amongst the slaves. Like the slave population,
right.
You know, was great diversity.
Right, right, right. And yeah, exactly. And it's, you know, it's, I mean, I accept it because I'm not, you know, if I'm watching the show, I'm just going to enjoy the show for what it is, for what it's worth and everything and whatnot. But if this was a documentary, you know, I'd be a little bit more ticked about that. And what, I mean, because, you know, a lot of things, you know, for a lot of shows, you have to embellish certain aspects to make it more entertaining because we get bored real quickly. The Wild West wasn't really as wild as we think it is. There wasn't a gunfight every 5 minutes. There was only 3 people killed at, like, the OK Corral, but we need to believe it's like a massacre every day or something. So when they do these shows, especially, like, these historical ideas and stuff like that, Rome and whatnot, you know, they embellish, they take away, they add, they, you know, all that stuff. And I go along with it for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, speaking of good shows, Mario, what's the next one on your list?
Since we were already kind of into that whole realm anyway, let's go and talk about Rome while we're sitting.
Rome is like my cinematic baby daddy. I love that show. Love that show.
Yeah, me too.
I'm only pissed off that it only lasted 2 seasons. I wanted it to go on way, way, way longer. And
yeah.
Oh,
because
I followed,
what the BBC pulled out.
I followed, like, deeply followed a lot of the actors that were on that show. Like, I would watch everything else that they were in.
Right.
Because they were so amazing on that show.
Man. That dude that played Titus Pullo, Ray.
Oh.
Ray, it's on the tip of my tongue, and I can't.
The one who plays his
think
best
of,
friend, that's my favorite guy in the world. This
yeah,
dude
oh,
is
yeah,
at work for 8 years. For 8 years, okay? He has a wife and 2 children at home. He's gone for 8 years, doesn't even look at another woman. Like, that's how much with her he is.
Right.
And he's
come
so loyal
out.
To his country that when his children are kidnapped, he actually asks for permission to leave the unit and go find them. Like, he will not desert his men without permission from the general to leave. Like, that's how patriotic
right.
he is. Like, this is, like,
yeah.
the most honorable human being on earth.
Yeah, that was Lucius Verinus, who was,
yeah.
like he was saying earlier about that, you know, kind of like even some Romans are more higher up than other Romans and whatnot. And even though Lucius Verinus came from a family with a name, he was really still low in the totem pole as far as Romans go. But he was still...
Yeah,
he
didn't have
and this
money.
Show, and this show shows you something else. Even the lowest Romans had slaves. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
He could only afford one or two, but he still had one. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Which Titus Pullo
like
kind of falls in love
with. If you can't afford a slave, then that means you probably are a slave.
Right.
That's what that means.
Right, and they get heavy into the religion in that. Like, the first season features primarily about Julius Caesar and his exploits, played by the awesome Syrian Hind. Love that guy. And apparently it even touches on the fact that right, exactly. It touches on the fact that he kind of had like an epilepsy. What is the hell
epilepsy.
Going on with that? Anyway, yeah, that shit. Yeah, and you know, although the documentary I saw said he might have also been a worm, I guess, in your brain or some shit. I don't know. But what when he has a seizure, he tells the dude young Octavius vowed to Orcus never speak of this again. And Orcus is kind of a god of the underworld, right? He was Yeah, he's a god of the underworld, punisher of the broken oaths, punisher of broken oaths. Yeah, and Dale references a lot of these ancient pagan gods from Orcus, Janus, you name it, you know, Pluto, Hades, and stuff like that. I don't want to take over. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think what was great about the show is that you did see the different gods that they worship, but you also saw, like, unlike Spartacus, there was less of an emphasis on slaves and more of an emphasis on the Roman nobility and the Roman common folk. And you really saw a lot of the things that people did in power play. You saw sex being used as a commodity, children being used as a commodity, money, of course, being used as a commodity, marriages used to elevate social status, you know, different things like that. Like, I think the show was a really realistic portrayal of what people do as far as social climbing and trying to manipulate events to a favorable outcome, more favorable for them anyway.
Exactly.
It really shows you, too, how so many people in power don't really have friends, or the people they think are their friends are not, you know, the people they think are the most loyal to them are the ones that actually have it out for them, you know, to a greater degree. Julius Caesar learned that the hard way. I think the only person who actually
Man,
had a real best friend. Oh, yeah, he got gotten. But the only person I enrolled on that podcast who actually had a friend was Lucius Verinus. Pullo was his friend. And he was Pullo's friend. And they were the only people on the show that actually had a friend that wasn't scheming to take their life, take their wife, or take their money.
Yeah, exactly. That relationship was just so endearing. It's really is too bad that they changed. Like, midway through season two, from what I heard, I think the BBC pulled out until they lost funding, so they had to pretty much truncate season two. You know, and they had a lot of things that they were going to do with the show, and unfortunately, they lost funding on it. But you know, I love the dynamics between, you know, the idea of pagan gods and stuff like that, and how these people believe that they're influencing their decision. And apparently, something else I read suggested that they were actually going to touch on the new religion coming in and taking over, which would have been the introduction of Jesus Christ.
The cult of Christianity.
Yep.
All right. Well, my next show is a little bit older than that, and it's very different from the genre that we've been discussing. And that's going to be one of my two favorite sitcoms of all time, Malcolm in the Middle. Yeah. Malcolm in the Middle. That show, the Frankie Muniz. I'm going to tell you why I love that show. There's so many reasons why, but here's a few. First off, I love how they're a poor family who they were like a lower middle class family who behaved like a lower middle class family. The children didn't wear designer labels. Things were always kind of strewn around the house. Like, the house looked like it was being lived in. You know, they were true to the sort of lifestyle they were trying to portray. And the show's authenticity rang even before anyone even opened their mouth. Everyone in the family was vastly different. It had a very unique personality trait. Love that. Like, no one really got lost in the shuffle. On so many sitcoms where you have more than two children, you always have two that are highlighted and portrayed, like, most prominently, and everyone else falls to the wayside, but it wasn't like that on Malcolm in the Middle. You got to know all of the characters on the show. I love the way that the mom, Lois, was really, like, she was the matriarch of the family, and yeah, they had a father, and yeah, they loved him and respected him, but it was clear that she was running the show. Love that aspect of it. The show never got boring. Like, there wasn't any episode that I felt was unnecessary. I think what I love the most about the show is that for as long as it ran, it didn't run overboard. It finished when it should have finished. It didn't keep, like, hanging on for years and years and years longer than its due date. Like, you know, it started, Malcolm was in middle school, and then it ended, you know, when Malcolm graduates from high school. We don't really care what happens next. Like, we don't feel dissatisfied. We don't feel like we're on a cliffhanger. We don't feel like the show has, should have ended 3 years ago. Like, it's great. Mario?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I accidentally had the phone on mute.
There you
did
your show?
Yeah,
did you ever get to watch the show?
I watched a little bit of it. I watched a little bit of it, and I really, you know, really was surprised that that goofy guy became a guy in Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad. Dude, when I saw Breaking Bad for the first time, I'm like, what the fuck happened to Hal? Like, Malcolm's dad? What happened to you?
Mm-hmm.
But it really goes to show what great range he has as an actor. Because Brian, like, he looks exactly the same, too. When Breaking Bad starts, he looks exactly like Hal from Malcolm in the Middle. But his personality is so wildly different. He's that kind of teacher that is so insecure, so unhappy, that he, even though he looks physically the same, he's unrecognizable.
Right. Right. He was, you know... I don't know why he put me in the mind of Macaulay Culkin, even though Macaulay Culkin is kind of a creep. But I don't know. I saw that they could probably be the same family that would leave their kids for a weekend or something like that. Anyway, yeah.
You know what?
That
that's a good point. The little kid on Malcolm in the Middle had a similar look about him from Home Alone, how he looked in that movie. That's a good. That's a good notice.
I thought I was tripping. Yeah. Okay.
No, you ain't tripping. You ain't tripping. You know, on Funny to the Moon, we have a category of TV shows that we call unwatchable hits. It's like something that everybody's talking about, but when you turn it on, it's unwatchable. And you're wondering, what is everybody talking about? You know, there's lots of shows like that. But I'm not going to go. That's a different topic, so I didn't want to. But, yeah, there's a lot of shows like that. And I'll give you an example of one. I don't know about Big Bang Theory. It's a hit for a lot of people, and it's unwatchable.
What? I
actually
love Big Bang Theory.
I love Big Bang Theory.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, me too.
And
I'm going to tell you the only thing I don't like about Big Bang Theory, but it's something that I don't like a lot about a lot of shows, is where you get the, in my opinion, very average-looking woman or blonde girl who is touted as being, like, the epitome of hotness and sexiness. That I don't like. I don't like someone who's ordinary-looking, you know, being touted as, like, the epitome of perfection because she's young and blonde. It's really annoying. Other than that,
They do have the girl from Blossom on there.
But she isn't portrayed that way. She's portrayed as, like, the female version of Sheldon, like the she-geek, the nerdette.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's
her name is Maya Angelic.
They still do. Yeah,
she actually does have that degree in real life. She actually does hold that degree in real life. After she finished Blossom, Maya Angelic went to university and studied sciences, and she has quite a few PhDs.
Wow.
Mm. Yeah, she is the character on that show, and that's how she dresses in real life as well. She's gone on record saying that she was acting when she was on Blossom. She's not acting on Big Bang Theory. The only thing that's different is her name.
Mm-hmm. But, you know,
we have a lot of those former child stars who they're like super secret geeks. Like the girl who played Wendy on Wonder Years is a math prodigy.
You know, in regard to what you just said a second ago, another thing I don't like is kind of the opposite of that. Like the person I'm supposed to believe is a completely untouchable geek that nobody wants to date, and they're actually handsome or attractive. And I'm like, why am I supposed to believe this person can't get a date? You know, like Chuck. Like, yeah, he's kind of goofy. But you can't tell me that guy is just completely not getting any attention at all.
You know what you just reminded me of? You reminded me of that movie from the 90s, She's All That, starring Rachel Lee Cook.
Yeah.
Like, they put these oversized clothes and oversized glasses on her, and we're supposed to think that she's hideous. Like, are you serious?
Yeah.
Have you looked at that?
Exactly.
Yeah, but the beauty, the ugly duckling transforming into the beauty is a regular Hollywood staple. You know what I mean? That's just regular.
Girl actually ugly or even plain. They have this girl who's gorgeous but hideously dressed.
Of course, because you can't. How are you gonna pretty up ugly? You can't do that. You see, I guess you could, but maybe now they will. But I don't know shit.
They had a TV show doing that actually. It was one of the first reality shows called The Swan, where they actually give ordinary or homely looking women plastic surgery and lipo and make them pretty.
Yeah, but to me that seems like a trap on the women in the mid range area, basically saying if we can make this ugly person look pretty, imagine what we can do for you.
Had horrible reviews, and the contestants that were on the show actually had horrible, backlash for the producers because it turns out a lot of them didn't like the transformations that they had undergone. They changed their minds; they thought they weren't ready, and the show exploited their self-esteem issue. So that show lasted like one season, and people were still talking about how horrible it was, how exploitative it was.
There was a documentary about plastic surgery made by a girl whose father was a plastic surgeon, and he had died, and she went to a plastic surgeon to see how they did, and it's like ruthless. It's like a combination of like car salesmen and, like you said, attacking someone's self-esteem. And I saw how to do it work. He said this one line I'll never forget. He's looking at her, and she's like, she wanted to get something done. But he says, you mean you're really okay with such a strong chin? I'm like, man, that's ruthless.
It's pretty harsh. It's pretty harsh. And, I mean, here in South Florida, especially in Miami, the most successful plastic surgeons are the best-looking ones. You have people that are naturally gorgeous and have an aptitude for science, and they study cosmetic surgery many, many years. I'm not saying that they don't know what they're doing. Clearly, they know what they're doing. But you are more successful as a plastic surgeon when you yourself are ridiculously good-looking.
Aha!
No one wants to go to the ugly plastic surgeon. They just don't.
Yeah, well, why don't you work on you?
Yeah. Yeah, that's fine.
Mario, what's next up on your list?
Community. There's only one.
Community? Is it a?
Yeah.
Now, I would guess that's on the unwatchable hits. Are you saying it's good?
It's great.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. And one of the characters, the blonde chick, is an atheist. And she has to deal with the black chick being the most religious person, trying her damnedest to convert her. You know, it's kind of funny how they went about it.
It's really funny, actually, because everyone on that show is a stereotype, but they're like a twist on the stereotype. You have the black woman who's super religious, but she's still, like, we found out, like, she's still sleeping with her ex-husband who got her married, which is so unchristian to do. You have the sheltered white girl who comes from good family background, et cetera, but she's lusting after an older man. And you have the guy who's supposed to be like the heartless player, but he's falling in love. You have the overprivileged white girl who never had to work for anything, but like she's like, addicted to all kinds of drugs and stuff like that. Or the nerdy black guy, who's not gay, but his best and closest relationship is with his male best friend. Like, everyone is like a play on a stereotype. And it's hilarious because this all takes place at a community college where you get to see that at least half the cast is way too smart to be going to a community college. And so you're like, what the hell are they doing here? But the show's so funny that you stop questioning that.
Right. And as a matter of fact, one of the girls, I think the brown-haired girl, I can't remember her name on the show. She's actually, I think she was Jewish. And,
And the black was always going on about her, how she needs to get saved and stuff and need to get right with Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
she's
pretty much all heathens.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing because of the way they pick on it and whatnot, and you know, it's a show you should watch if only for the fact that it's just hilarious. It's irreverent. I don't know why I'm so damn tongue tied tonight. I mean, damn.
Water.
I mean, it's so.
Water. What you doing?
Yeah, man. But you know, check it out though. It's kind of funny because they don't dwell on the fact that the girl's an atheist. But she there's a show in which she mentioned it, and the black girl just keeps going on about.
Well, the blonde girl's
an
atheist, but so is Abed, the Indian guy, because he's like, I'm surprised to believe in him. He's an atheist as well.
Right.
Is that for one episode or?
You don't have to watch it from the beginning. You can jump right in because every episode is really different from the last episode. It really is a sitcom. It's not like a drama, like an ongoing series. You don't have to know what happened 2 seasons ago to get what's going on now.
Okay. Well, you got me worried because I can't believe that there's some TV sitcom that's good because I watched the old sitcoms, and they were great, and it's hard for me to watch.
No, it's awesome because it's not like the old sitcoms at all, and it doesn't try to be. The show does, it's funny because they do unexpected humor. It's not one of those shows that you can watch, and you know exactly what's going to happen 5 minutes from now and what they're leading up to. The build-up is never what you think it is.
Right.
Yeah,
right,
you know,
right,
the problem with a lot of those shows today is they do like a lot of like soft racism, and they do it like to a bunch of different races. So they think they're doing it even-handed, but they're really just being racist. You know what I'm talking
about?
There
really aren't racist aspects on the show. There really isn't.
Okay, good.
So, you know, and a lot of times, sometimes that junk cracks me up. Like I'm watching Archer, and you know, out of nowhere, they says. I was just telling this big Negress here or something, and it just the way it's delivered and the way it's said is like, oh, okay, fuck it, I'm gonna laugh at it, you know. You know, and Aisha Tyler, you know, she's hilarious on there.
Yeah, she is.
What's your next show?
My next show is actually
else?
Now that you've reminded me, because it's the same actor who plays Archer who does the voice of this man. My next show is actually Bob's Burgers. And the guy who plays Bob is voiced by H. John Benjamin, the same man who does the voice of Archer. Bob's Burgers comes on Fox. It's the only watchable show still left on Fox. Honestly, ever since they killed Brian and they tried to bring him back, I was like, Family Guy lost me for life. The Simpsons should have been canceled at least 3 years ago. But Bob's Burgers, that show keeps me in stitches. It's about a man and his wife and their 3 children who live above his burger restaurant. This is his passion, making burgers. And, you know, his wife, Lynn, is eccentric. You've got his oldest daughter, Tina, whose hormones are out of control. She's, you know, she kind of speaks in a monotone and looks like the cartoon version of Lisa Loeb, but she's a complete horn dog. There is his son, Gene, who is this eccentric, comedian / musician, and of course his youngest child, Louise, who is brilliant, and I mean ridiculously smart, smarter than the whole family combined, and a compulsive liar. So it's really fun, and they live right next door to a funeral parlor. Like, the show is so great. It's another one of those shows you don't need to watch the last episode to know what's going on in this current episode. I mean, most animated series are like that, but it's very, very smart. There are some really intelligent jokes on the show, and you laugh at it, and also you feel really happy that you got it, that you were smart enough to get it, because you know that this is a joke that most people didn't even understand was there. It's a great comedy. I think it's one of the best shows that Fox has ever done, and I'm just glad they didn't cancel it after one season, which used to be the trend back in the 90s, any show that was on Fox.
You know, that same guy, he was on another cartoon in which he played Satan, and it was stupid as hell. it just pretty much the misadventures of Satan, you know, and dealing with, you know, people not doing
the
right, like you're not.
Misadventures of Satan.
It was that wasn't the name of it. I can't remember the name of it, But it was stupid enough. It should have been called The Misadventures of Satan. It's one of those shows you got to watch and it's kind of like Beavis and Butthead. Just don't fucking think about it. Just laugh at it.
Okay. All right. What's the best show on your list?
I'm gonna go with South Park, man, because that show right there pulls no punches. They had a show on Mormons which cracked me up because it showed how what's his name, John Smith, was that his name?
Joseph Smith.
Joseph Smith. Yeah, founded the religion and everything. It's so stupid the way they showed it, but the mantra that keeps going through the whole show is dumb, 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 dumb. Like that, like pretty much saying this is some bullshit. And then they had another
show
one
pretty
on.
Much every religion, though.
Right, right. Then they had another one on Easter.
Too.
Yeah, that's what pissed Isaac Hayes off. You know, it's just, you can do a show on Islam. You can do a show on Christianity, Judaism, Mormonism. You know, you've been on the show this whole time, and when they get to Scientology, now you got a problem. I found that really hypocritical of Isaac Hayes for that. First of all, and on top of that, pardon my ignorance, that was the first time I realized there were black Scientologists. So, you know, the fact that they have a way of pretty much calling this shit out, but in their hilarious, dumbass cartoon. They had the one on Easter in which there's an Easter cult, and I think that's the one that kind of did a riff. They did a riff on the Da Vinci Code and shit, and it goes off the rails, man.
Yeah, I like how the show pretty much makes fun of everyone's religious ridiculous dogma and personal insecurities. I think that my favorite episode of South Park ever, like I literally know every song that was on this episode, was a Christian rock hard episode where Cartman decided that the easiest thing in the world to do to get money is to be in a Christian rock band, because all you have to do was take popular love songs and replace you with God and baby with Jesus and you'd have a hit. And I think it was one song that I really, really, really loved. And it was one that he actually wrote himself. I think he went, I want to get down on my knees and start pleasing Jesus, feel his salvation all over my face. And I was like, oh, my gosh. But then I thought about a lot of the Christian music that I used to listen to, and they all sounded like love songs on the edge of wanting to make love to Jesus. So I'm like, you know what? The creators of the show are right. They're absolutely right.
Right, right. They
and he's
sure
like,
are.
You know, my Christian rock album is going to go triple platinum. And poor thing, he had to learn the hard way. There is no platinum in Christian music. It's gold, frankincense, and myrrh, and the album went triple myrrh.
Right. Yeah, and it riffed on the way it riffs on that is funny, because if you turn on the Christian station, you know, and these people will talk all about secular music and music of the world and everything. Yet they'll take a popular song and add in Christian themes in it and call it like this is original. It's cool because it's talking about God and shit, and it just really just. It's lame. It's so lame I can't talk, man. I mean, it's
no,
lame
actually, like,
to be
honestly,
damn lame.
The most popular CCM music has always been the kind that's either very ambiguous or sounds like a love song. Like, personally, when I still listen to CCM, and that's for those of you that don't know, that's contemporary Christian music, it's not like gospel because it doesn't sound like what you hear in the church. It sounds like what you hear on popular radio. And that's
okay,
what
I got one. Couldn't you just make up some? Like, here, I don't, there's an old song, but here, I can do it right now. Jesus, oh, Jesus, got a hole in your hand.
Actually, there was a song on the show, on that episode, and it went, once, twice, three times the Savior. Yeah.
There you go.
You can
do it over
right?
and over again.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you remember 25th of December.
No, honestly, when I was listening to CCM, there were two songs I remember, well, three, that I remember distinctly thinking, even as much as I liked them, that they didn't sound that, like they could have been love songs. There was Undo by Russia Fools. There was Consume Me by BC Talk. There was More by Tyrone Wells. And, oh, and another one, this one was really popular, and this was back when I was still Catholic. It's called I Need You to Love Me by Barlow Girl. All of these songs sounded like someone talking to a lover or a boyfriend or a girlfriend, but they were super popular on Christian hit radio. And More, like by Tyrone Wells, doesn't even mention God or Jesus one time.
Mm-hmm. You know,
it alludes to him, but it never says the words God or Jesus.
My ex used to listen to this song all the time.
Happy Jesus to me. Happy Jesus.
No, Consume Me is great. There's a line in the song that says, "You consume me like a burning flame running through my veins. You consume me moving through me. Anytime, any place, you invade my space." Like, he's talking about God now. Like, seriously?
Yeah. My ex used to listen to this song all the time. I'm talking about, "I need you now." And I forget the name of this song, but he used to get on my goddamn nerves.
There's an old song like that, but here, I got one. I want Jesus, lots and lots of Jesus.
I'm done.
I want the Holy Ghost, too. I want Jesus, lots and lots of Jesus. And that's the Holy Ghost, too. You know what? Actually, that could be a hit. While we're messing around. That could be a hit.
What's your next show?
That right here.
What's your next show,
My next show would have to be Roseanne. Actually, that is the number two of my favorite two family sitcoms after Malcolm in the Middle. It's Roseanne. I think the show was great. It showed another lower middle class family, and the show was really great in that it showed a lot of ups and downs, mostly downs. We never had these situations where great things kept magically happening to these people. We were in the middle of their drudgery, and it was their everyday life and how she handled it with grace and wit that made the show funny. You know, we had the daughter that got married as a teenager. We had another one that was living with her boyfriend in the house. You know, we had to deal with issues with Roseanne's family. We saw her relationship with her sister and their relationship with their mother, her relationship with her husband, her relationship with her kids, and her sons-in-law. And just handling that as a normal person. I know there's so many episodes that I'm watching on the show from, you know, way, way back. And I'm watching it now, and I'm thinking, you know what, it's a really good thing that show came on in the early 90s, because right now there'd be someone protesting something that was said or done on that show. But it was real. Like, it was honest, and I really loved how honest and, like, you know, pretty much you just put everything out on the table on that show. You didn't feel like there was anything being fabricated. And like Malcolm in the Middle, they behaved and dressed like the station they were trying to portray. They were poor people. You saw the kids wear the same clothes on multiple episodes, okay? You saw them wearing clothes that looked old. You saw the house in disarray. They didn't live in a big house either. It was never a situation where, oh, these people are poor, but they live in this enormous house. Like, I think it was Seventh Heaven. They had money issues from time to time, but they lived in a two-story house that had 8 or 9 bedrooms. Those people had a lot of freaking kids on that show. But, yeah, with Roseanne, it wasn't like that at all. Like, this was, like, the typical portrayal of the white American family. And I think it was a really great – it would have been a really great counterpart to Family Matters if Family Matters had been a little bit more real as well. I feel that the relationship that the people on that show had with their children was a little bit too artificial for me to put it on my favorites. But Roseanne was, like – I really thought there was a lot of genuine – dialogue on that show. That's why I loved it.
Awesome. So Roseanne should show everybody the difference between that show and the other shows, because, you know, we put the other shows into a category of no money problem whites. And right, Roseanne will be the opposite of that. Okay?
Right.
So, yeah, Friends, no money problem whites. right? Seinfeld, No Money Problem Whites. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And on down the line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I did kind of like that show. I liked it for us. It was more of an honest show than anything, you know. You know, because there's only so much Beverly Hills 90210 you can take before you like, ah, man, you look, how the fuck are you a millionaire with all these damn punk-ass problems, man? I mean, God.
Yes.
Anyway. You know.
Privilege problem. Like,
yeah.
More money, more Jesus.
So, what the hell was I about to say? Oh, I guess I'll just run into the next show then. Were you done then? I don't want to cut you off. Okay.
Yeah, I'm done.
You ready for this one?
Yes, I'm ready.
Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
I was waiting for you to bring the show up.
Right. This is one of the most epic shows I've ever seen. And focusing on the religion of the show, it's a world in which there's not just one religion. There's the seven, which I think are the newer gods, and then you got the older gods that are, you know, pretty much the heart trees and stuff. And you got another god that's called the Red God, Rolor, and then you got the Drowned God, and you got every different regions and different types of people have their own religious beliefs. Unfortunately, Rolor is the only one that's showing that, I'm actually here doing something. Yeah. But the rest
Red
of
Witch
them.
The Red Witch is the only one whose God is real, though, because she's making stuff happen.
That's what I'm saying. You know, it's she's the only one you actually seeing. It season two starts with her commanding the burning of the effigies of the old gods, you know, of the seven gods. The mother, the father, the stranger, the maid, the nun, the harvester. I can't remember all of them. Anyway, there's seven different types of gods, and each one of them have a different thing. And you talk about like the children of the forest, and how when the first men came to the continent, they pretty much wiped out most of the forest and stuff like that. And so. But they adopted some of their religions. That's why you see the heart tree, which is a tree that has a face on it, and some like Ned Stark commune with their gods through this heart tree and whatnot. It's, you know, and if you're looking for a gritty, I don't give a damn how you feel about this type of show. That's one of man.
Game of Thrones is good. We have a good variety of ethnicities, not races so much, but ethnic groups and nationalities. We have a good variety of languages. We have a good variety of religious beliefs, cultural customs, et cetera, et cetera. It's a great, great, great show. And it's very gripping. You never get too locked on to any one character. You never forget that there are other circumstances and other people in the peripheral. It's really great. I'm going to warn anybody who wants to read these books that they're based on or to watch the series, please don't get attached to anyone. They're probably going to die.
And they got dragons.
Yep. I think that's one thing I love about the show is the unpredictability of it. Man, it's gripping. I mean, they have their own weird religious sayings and stuff like that. Like, Rolor has for the night is dark and full of terrors, which I don't know about you, but that's you know, man, that ain't the religion for me, man. That sounds a bit creepy. You have someone who has, you have a god that's a little bit more positive I might be able to get into or something. You know, trust me, this god is hands-on. This god is doing something. You don't see any other god doing anything. Unless you want to count the direwolves, but I don't think that counts, though.
I mean, we have some people with magical powers, like the dude that Arya Stark met and stupidly refused to go with because she's dumb. she was a porn... Oh, no, she was really using her thinking mind, like her thinking mind and not her emotional mind, she would have gone with Dude, learned everything he had to teach her, and then used that power to save her family. But she's stupid. Sadly, she's the smartest person in that family.
yeah. I ain't gonna spoil too much of it, but I guess it's one of the reasons why I like the show is that the good guys fuck up. You had to put quotes around good guys and quotes around bad guys because the people you think are the bad guys, they a lot of times have good points and they actually make sense. Like, oh yeah, I'm supposed to hate you, but you actually just made sense, you know. And so, this is a world that is not the typical sorcery type of show and everything. There's a lot of political intrigue going on behind the scenes, coupled with all these religious aspects going on behind. And if the show goes on any further, you'll see how dangerous religious fanaticism can get. And if it should either be this season or the season thereafter where they get to the dangers of the religious fanaticism and stuff. And yeah, it's amazing that everybody has their own God. And everybody believes in a different aspects of their own gods. And in their own sort of ways, you know, the gods, you know, they believe the gods are influencing them. And the show doesn't put the religion, you know, as front and center as a lot of the shows would, you know. So, yeah, check out Game of Thrones. For the night is dark and full of terror. Winter's coming and shit. Break your
All foot. Right. You know what my next show is, right, Mario? You already know what it is.
Right.
It is The Walking Dead.
Oh, I'm gone. I've only watched half an episode later.
Before I say another word of praise about that show, I want to say very first and foremost that I'm very upset at the lack of melanin-rich faces on that show. I'm very upset that the show is based near the Atlanta area, and yet we are expected to believe that a group of white people of average intelligence, most of which have no hunting ability or defensive skills, manage to live that long. I don't believe that anyone except Daryl and Rick would have made it as far as that group has made it. I refuse to believe that every black person in Atlanta has become a zombie or died. I just refuse.
Right.
That said, the show is really, really, really good.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a great show. It's a great post-apocalyptic show. I really wasn't feeling it season before last because every character on that show became uber religious, and it's like, dude, shut up. God doesn't care about you. That's why we're in a zombie apocalypse.
Right. You know, yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, but.
Yeah. What they fail to understand is that, you know, if this is a test, it's a really shitty one, and it should have been over by now. But yeah, you were saying?
Yeah, that cracked me up because I think season two we actually end up in a church and one of the characters is sitting there praying, and then they walk up to a statue of Jesus and talk to him or something like that, and it's like, you have witnessed the end of the world, man. There are dead people walking around willing to eat you alive. And you're in the church praying? You are screwed. I mean,
yeah.
You know, that's realistic as hell to me because, I mean, it doesn't come hell or high water. Aliens could descend upon this earth with their death rays wiping people out left and right. You're still going to have people praying. Never mind the fact that, you know, that maybe you should have prevented it and stuff. But, you know, hey, religion is a strong force, and people are never going to let it go, even in the face of complete and utter destruction.
Yeah, definitely. Cool thing about The Walking Dead, though, is I feel that a lot, what I like about the show is the reactions of the characters. I feel that the way that people are reacting to the zombie apocalypse, especially people like the governor, is very, very, very realistic. I totally believe that there was someone, that there'd be people that would exploit such a situation in order to amass power. I think that there are tons of people that would, you know, seek a group, you know, strength in numbers, and would be unwilling or unable to make it alone. I believe there are people that would have their time to shine for once in their life. You know, you have Daryl, typical redneck, but he has hunting and tracking skills that kind of make him a hero in a situation like this.
Right. Right, right.
Yeah.
You know, and it, you know, like even in the last, season, which there's even more drama going on that I'm not going to spoil, you got one of the characters still reading the Bible, still using the Bible. And I don't know if it's because religion indoctrination, and I do believe this would happen. So I'm going to talk about it kind of realistically, is that I don't know if it's a sign of such incredible religious indoctrination that even in spite all of what is going on, despite all this with what you're seeing, you're still clinging to God, or is it a sign of people sticking to what is familiar, what is comfortable, which gives them comfort, you know? And I guess on one level, I can't too much argue with somebody trying to find some form of peace somehow, some way. And but my logical mind says that it's time to throw the fucking Bible away.
Wow. Yeah. There's Herschel. His character is really kind old man, but he's so annoying to me because he's such a Bible thumper. Like, dude, you have lost your wife. You've lost one of your daughters. You've lost your leg, farm, you've lost your property, and you've lost the world as you know it. Please shut the hell up now.
Yeah. Apparently he lost a random-ass son that just popped up twice in one season to the point where I'm like, who the hell is that guy that just got killed? I'm like, oh, that's Herschel's son. I'm like, what the hell has he been the whole season? I just, you know, anyway, that's really a minor spoiler because...
Yeah, they never even talked about the fact that he had a son.
Yeah, so don't worry about that one too much because you're never getting to meet... He doesn't even have lines as far as I remember. So, you know, yeah, Herschel's son dies. Fuck it. I don't care. You know, and, you know, I think it's really important to understand, you know, that the... you know, no matter what, people will try to clean the God, clean the religion. And I guess I can understand that in some ways, but sometimes my atheist mind is looking at it like, okay, it's time to let this shit go because you've just been proven so wrong.
Yeah.
You know, go ahead.
One of the things that I did like about the show at first, but then I slowly grew to like is how at first, but later on, we learned that the zombie virus is a virus in everyone, and everyone won't get it when they die. But I also thought that was a great, great thing to put into the plot because, you know, how else are you going to explain something like this? If they just spontaneously emerge outside of our bodies, then why hasn't it been stopped yet, you know? But at the same time, their explanation for why people become zombies also leaves you with the question, how did humanity get this virus?
Right.
Yeah. So that's an interesting one. I really want to know if they ever find out how the virus came to be.
I want to know that too. And I think it's interesting, and this is this came from, I think this came from George Romero, as a matter of fact, that this virus is already in them, but came from is the problem.
George Romero, didn't he do that movie with Rodriguez? What is his name? Something Rodriguez.
You talking about Robert Rodriguez?
I believe so. He did the movie where there were zombies. It was starring Rose McGowan. Fergie was in it, too.
Oh, no. That's Tarantino. They did a Grindhouse thing.
Yeah,
and
okay,
If you love your shitty, terrible-ass movies that have some type of entertainment value, watch some Grindhouse.
Okay, first of all, Grindhouse was awesome. It's not a shitty movie. I love Grindhouse, so please don't talk about Grindhouse.
Talking about that old 70s blaxploitation, exploitation shit, women in prison, all that stuff.
Yeah, pretty much. And exploitation of everybody, pretty much.
Yeah, it's amazing how much sex you can have in prison, but, you know, anyway. and
that's
I guess, show. You know, what was my next show? Let me look. I have it written down. Cheer. The Simpsons. And I haven't really, really, really watched Simpsons and the Simpsons in a minute, but I do remember them having, you know, they love to get digs on religion. And they used to crack me up, man. Like every now and then, the billboard to the church will have something funny on it. Picking that religion and stuff. And, you know, because, you know, if anybody watches the show knows that the lead character, one of the characters is a reverend. And so he has the stereotypical kind of white holy man type of speech and whatnot. I really do think they need to insert a black character in there with that because, you know, the black church is completely different. And God, you know, stuff like that. And so, you know, and so this track, it'll crack you up because, you know, like one of the captions I saw was him saying everything is a sin. Have you ever sat down and read this thing? Technically, you're not allowed to go to the bathroom. You know, in which, you know, it's funny because there are 600 plus sins in the Bible. So you're screwed one way or the other. And, you know, I can't remember. I think Matt Groening is an atheist, but I can't remember per se. But it's always been hilarious to me how many shots they take at religion. You know, I mean, especially this is a show that's on a major network, and they'll keep going at it.
I don't know. Let's see. My last show, because we are near the close of this little show here that we're getting into. Let me see what's on my list. The Boondocks. Anyone who knows me knows that I'm a huge fan of Aaron Magruder. I'm a huge fan of The Boondocks. I think the show is epic. I think he says so many things that so many people want to say but can't say or don't have the balls to say. He went on Oprah. He went in on BET. He goes in on self-hate and black folk. He goes in on interracial relationships. He goes in on how black people in America have their priorities out of whack. I love Aaron Magruder. The whole show is such an amazing social commentary. I think that the best part of the show is that the wisdom is coming from a child's mouth. Huey Freeman, who's our protagonist, is the smartest person in his family and the smartest person in the vicinity of where he lives. But nobody ever pays him any mind because they think he's like this cynical, unnaturally bitter child, party pooper, cynic. And he's only saying what's real and what's happening, what everyone should be paying attention to. But everyone who's older than him is irresponsible, and everyone who's younger than him is too busy being a child to really pay attention to the things that he's talking about.
Right.
I loved it. I mean, it's really great, well-done animation as well. And, you know, every time he talks about it, like there was one episode where he's talking about a character named Winston Jerome, who it was clearly aimed at Tyler Perry. And the episode was about a black playwright that dresses as an old woman. And has this like Christ-centric, hackneyed, Bojangle kind of coonery in his plays and in his movies. And this guy turns out to be secretly gay, and all the cast members are in a Christian cult. There's another episode where he talks about this rapper, who actually is supposed to be a few rappers, called Gangstalicious. And Gangstalicious is all this hardcore rapper, but this guy is secretly gay. You know, things like that. And, you know, he comes at it from many different angles, where he just tries to open people's eyes about the things that they would rather not pay attention to that are going on in the black community, and forces them to be aware of it.
Yeah, I love that. I love that, like, when he tackled R. Kelly and whatnot. And, yeah, he really does. I mean, he hits hard. You know, he really pulls a lot of that stuff out front and center, and just kind of like South Park, talks about it in a funny manner. And it's almost disarming, but almost it's still kind of funny at the same time. Yeah, you know, I appreciate his comedy mm-hmm. and stuff. Okay, we got a caller, and I'm pretty sure what's about to happen here, but I'm like, hell, why not? So let's go ahead.
Okay, it's a friend, not a foe. I'm not going to come with any chicanery or any fuckery. It's Brown Beasley. How are you?
Hi.
Oh, okay.
Good. You can be as alarmed as you want to, but I do kind of have I wish I'd have caught some of the earlier commentary on the different shows. Side note, I saw American Hustle today. Definitely go see it.
Okay.
It's excellent. It's excellent. Thought-provoking. A lot of things going on there. Back to Aaron Magruder. You know, Aaron Magruder, one thing that's interesting about him is that even though he has this platform and he touches so many people, he's not in it for the fame. You know, how many people do you see these days that are like, there's like this thirst to be a celebrity, to be famous, to be seen? He's in the background. He has doesn't have any desire. One thing that concerns me, and I agree with just about everything you guys said, that the commentary is amazing, it's shocking, it's thought-provoking, it's real. But even though it's satire and he attacks some real-type figures, when a black journalist or comedian or whatever you want, when they're only attacking black people and never the check writers and the string pullers, and they don't incorporate that into the equation, because he never does that. And
right.
It's too easy to throw stones at victims of genocide, slavery. You get where I'm coming from? It almost makes me wonder if someone's pulling his strings, because you don't see him going after or exposing and ridiculing anything other than black folks. That's all.
Well, you know,
now think about that.
You do make a point, however, he does kind of clown on white people. It's just, I think a lot of people are so stuck on the fact that the cast is black, and why wouldn't they be? He's black, that they miss it. There are many episodes, especially any episode that features black rappers. Well, he'll show you the suburban white kids showing their ass, and they'll be like the rappers, the number one supporter.
The wiggers.
He'll show you in every episode where you have crowds gone crazy. It's a white person doing something ridiculous in a public place. The show focuses mainly on black people because it mostly focuses on his relationship with his grandfather, his brother, and their neighbor Ruckus.
He did have that episode on Tyler Perry that mysteriously disappeared. From what I heard, Tyler Perry wasn't too happy. He wasn't too happy about that.
Or maybe the people that enabled Tyler Perry to make films, and of course his films are profitable, and they can be funny, but you know Tyler Perry. The bigger point that I'm making, okay, none of our, if you think about it, okay, none of our black moguls and icons are truly independent, okay? From Jay-Z to Oprah to Tyler Perry, none of them are truly independent.
Yeah.
Everyone, yeah. They have to go to people behind the scenes, check writers, okay? Jay-Z has shown, and I'm a Jay-Z fan from the very beginning, okay? But people evolve, and I'm just disappointed in the state of affairs. I see that Kevin Powell is going after R. Kelly. And then I saw somebody on Twitter who I don't even have an account. I lurk. But his name is Curtis Goon. And you should follow him. He's real smart. But basically what he said is that, you know, it's real easy to go after R. Kelly. But what about the people that enable R. Kelly to make it, you know, that make money off of R. Kelly, that promote him and keep him in people's faces? And it seems like we're too quick to condemn one of our own, and I'm not defending anything R. Kelly's doing, but R. Kelly exists, and any of these people that I mentioned, they exist at the whims of people that we don't see and
I'm
don't
sorry.
Hear
I hate to cut
that
you
profit
off,
off of them.
I hate to cut you off, but the people that are promoting R. Kelly simply could not promote him. If his fans, mostly black women in their 30s and 40s, there are tons of people who are much more famous, had much better careers than R. Kelly, and when the public turned against them, it ruined their careers no matter how hard the PR and marketing was. Those people are responsible for R. Kelly's success. The diehard loyalty of his fans who don't care about the fact that he was abusing and exploiting teen girls, that is what's responsible for his success, and they had every right to go after R. Kelly and those who supported his music by buying those records and concert tickets.
Well, there's no absolutes, and your point's well taken.
Okay. Well, we appreciate
I just disagree, but I wasn't a troll call.
I understand.
I gave an intelligent viewpoint from a different perspective. And I was agreeable and nice. But that doesn't mean the next 111 call might not do anything wild. But I commend you for taking a chance. You look behind the door, and at least no one was harmed.
Cool. Well, I appreciate your call, man. You take care. Have a nice weekend.
You too.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
All right.
Okay, and with that, we're going to go ahead and wrap up. As always, take a chance to listen to the other BFT family shows. If you are any on Facebook and you're friends with any one of us, we do promote our shows and each other's shows so that you're aware of what's going on here. The next show coming up will be Kim's show, Black Free Thinkers, which is going to air at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and I don't remember the topic off the top of my head, but as always, it's going to be a good one. She's always got some good shows coming up. Everybody else is, you got Raina's RSS feed and the Breakbeat and, you know, Vita's On Blast, and we try to keep these shows coming with some variety so you can get some information and hear some good shit and maybe learn a thing or two. What you got to say there, Em?
All I have to say is listen to Vita's show, listen to MC Brooks' show, listen to Albert's show, listen to everyone's show, and have a great weekend. And because we won't be back for another 2 weeks, happy holidays, everyone. And will it be New Year in 2 weeks? Yeah,
shit,
well,
I think so.
Happy New Year. Happy
right,
New Year,
yeah,
everyone.
So even if you are, no matter what you celebrate, have a nice, happy holiday, Christmas, New Year's, whatever. Be safe. And don't speed because you know them boys going to be out pretty damn thick.
Please don't
also,
drink and drive.
Gotta,
please don't text and drive. Don't do stuff
right.
While driving, pretty much.
Right. Also, I got to mention, just to back us up, the Game of Thrones opening scene is owned by HBO and their creators and whatnot. I do not own that. The ending theme I'm about to play is owned by Starz and their people. I don't own that either. So just This no copyright intention is in, no copyright infringement is intended. All that good stuff. With that being said, y'all be safe and enjoy yourself, and we'll see you next time.
All right. Have a great night, everyone. Bye.